Wondering how to build an optimal outreach strategy to contact your clients? Playbooks is the answer. Visit InsideSales.com to learn more.
Welcome to the Sales Acceleration Podcast, where B2B leaders talk about real problems and real solutions across the areas of demand generation, sales, and sales operations. I'm your host, Gabe Larson. Let's get at it.
All right, welcome everybody to the Sales Acceleration Podcast. You've got your host, Gabe Larson, and I've got a special guest who we actually share some interesting background, Donald Kelly. Donald, how the heck are you?
Dude, I am doing well. If I was doing any better, I'd be jealous of myself. It's so good today.
That's right. It's bright and early, the Monday morning mantra here. Let's get cracking. So we were just chatting, you know, we both share a little bit of a background. I went to Brigham Young University. Donald went to Brigham Young University, Idaho. I had a sister-in-law go up there. One of my best friends went up there. How was it going to school in Idaho? Was it all right, or did you freeze your tail off up there?
It was different, bro. Gabe, it was like, look, let's imagine this. A South Floridian was born in Jamaica, moved to Florida when he was 9. The first time I saw snow was in Detroit for a couple of years, right? And then now I went out to Idaho after being home for 6 months after leaving Detroit. And it was just a whole different experience. I had a friend once that was from Russia, and she said that we were talking about if you could travel anywhere in the world, where would you go? She's like, I'll spend time in the U.S. and go to your different states. I'm like, why is that? You can go anywhere in the world. She's like, because all of your states are like a different country.
Honestly.
And I was like, man, it's so true. And when I went out west, that's when I really saw it, because Idaho is a different country, bro. It was a different world. Not in a bad way. It was in a great way, because I had never been to Yellowstone, and every summer my buddies and I would just drive up to Yellowstone.
Oh my goodness.
Went to Absolutely. California and did all this cool stuff. Did some outdoors things I never had the opportunity to do. Went down to Zion's and climbed some of the hikes there and did some mountain stuff. But it was cold, bro. I'm not going to lie about that. After 2 weeks, I'm like, hey, I want to go home, man. It's too cold.
Honestly, you know, I'm in Salt Lake City, Utah here, and we just got done with the winter. And man, it's like, you know, I spent a couple years overseas, lived in a warmer climate in Dubai. And man, warmer climates are just better. I'm just jealous. You know, it's better to vacation in the cold than it is to actually live in the cold. I don't know why I do it. I mean, I know because I got family here, my wife's family, and blah, blah, blah. But anyways, so we share a little bit of a background, but, you know, I was more impressed with just kind of that last part of your story, right? Kind of how sales evangelist just kind of came to be. Can you give the 30-second, you know, the Cliff Note version of how you decided to say, hey, you know what? I'm as good as anybody at this. Let's just do it.
Yeah, it was I was doing B2B sales. I started doing B2B sales, and I was sucking at it. And then I needed to get the help. So I went with a company, and they actually put me through some formal sales training processes. And bro, it was like night and day in the way I sold, from like here coasting to all of a sudden I was closing like deals that were $30,000. And the biggest deal I ever closed at that point with the previous company was like $10,000. So that high caliber, I was like, man, this is great. And then getting higher deals and closing them. And I was realizing that there's so many people in sales, whether they're entrepreneurs or sales professionals, who are in a similar boat that I was, that never had any formal sales training processes, but then all of a sudden they're thrown in and then say, oh, you got to hit that quota by the end of the year or end of the quarter. And it's like, what the heck? So I started to share the advice and tips that I knew from things that work, because I realized sales wasn't complicated, Gabe. All you have to do is follow a basic fundamentals. If you follow the fundamentals, you can be successful. So that's what I started to do. And then I started to have a little bit selfish side to it, where I started to interview top sales expert. My first guest was Jeffrey Gittimer.
No way, is that right? Mr. Gittimer. Oh man, yeah, he's fantastic.
And it was awesome. And if you landed into that, it was a bluebird. Actually, a friend of mine was interviewing him for his podcast and connected me, and we co-interviewed Jeffrey, and it was great. And I learned so much from that helped me to realize I can, you know, learn from all these other experts. So I started getting more experts and guests. And then within the first month or so, people started to ask, hey, do you do some coaching? And I'm like, I've coached flag football, my friends. And that was about it. And then I was like, I don't know what to tell you. And then it was the belief that you have that I can't do it. And then I started just charging. And then next thing you know, more came, and then opportunities came. And eventually TSC or to sales evangelists, just evolved. And then I jumped ship in 2015 and started in 2013. So
I love it. I love it, man. Well, congratulations. You certainly have come across my radar a couple times, and we thought, hey, man, this guy knows what he's doing. Let's get him on. You know, we've been running this podcast for about 6 to 8 months, but had some fun conversations. So now I want to get in and see if we can't steal some of your knowledge.
Donald,
want to get into the concept a little bit of how to coach your sellers and how to do it right. But before we do, we always like to ask people to personalize themselves, something a little more unique about you. We call it a one unique aspect. Anything come to mind?
You know, there's multiple things that come to mind, but one of them that I'll share is, you know, believe it or not, I was born in Jamaica and I grew up in Florida. And I actually, I don't like seafood, but the other fun part, I'm sure you guys have all heard of the movie Jamaican Bobsled, right?
Absolutely. That's a good old one. Oldie but a goodie.
So you remember Sanka, right? He was trying to do the push cart thing, you know,
running right
around the road. So that's a big, that's how people did a lot of, in the cities, like transport stuff, transport goods, you do some push carts. So as a kid, you always wanted to jump on a push cart, right? So in the country where my grandparents lived, they had this like a little bumpy little road, and a friend and I were trying to create our own little push cart in the summer when my family like shipped me out to the country to stay for the summer as a kid. I was like maybe like 5 or so, 6. And I was pushing this, trying to do this little push cart, and I fell off, dude, and I busted my head in the back. And I have the scar still. I was bleeding like crazy. But that was my big thing, trying to be a push cart champion.
Is that right? And you got to... You got a scar to prove it. Is that right?
Man. Look at that. I have my push cart scar. So when I see you in person, I'll show you.
Yeah, my goodness. Well, that'll teach you the lesson. You never did go further than that, though, huh? You couldn't make it onto the Jamaican bobsled team or anything like that.
Nope. I stayed stayed on the other side of that stuff.
You win some, you lose some. I got a couple scars, actually. You can probably see it in the camera here. I got one. My wife was talking about it the other day. This one comes from a fire. My brother was roasting a marshmallow and, you know, caught on fire, and he flicked it. Flaming marshmallow on my cheek, man. So those scars, they always remind you of the good times, right? Anyway, so let's get into it, man. So I want to talk coaching for a minute. I mean, you do it full time all the time. And I think this probably is, I'm excited about this one because I think it probably aligns pretty well with your background. You know, I mean, it sounded like it was pretty transformational for you to receive coaching as you saw that hockey stick in performance. It sounds like you feel like maybe you've been able to crack the code in some form or fashion and how to do it with others. So as you think about how to effectively coach your sellers, what's kind of your go-to player? How do you kind of begin the process?
You know, good question. The first thing that we have to realize too is that, as a leader, a sales leader, or a sales rep, or anyone that's getting coaching or some type of guidance, the first thing you have to do is assess where you are right now. Or even before that, sometimes I find that leaders, when they do coaching, they do it as a means of a top-down approach where, you know, my boss is telling me I need to up my sales reps, you know, output, right? And they're not making enough quotas or not hitting quota enough. So therefore, I need to do a push down. And that's the first big issue, problem that we find, because people then start motivating or trying to motivate based on fear and trying to push sellers to do things that, you know, out of a, you know, to fulfill my bottom line as opposed to help the seller. And when you coach someone, you have to make sure you realize that each individual is totally different. And the way you guide them is going to be different. You may have a sales team of 15 sellers, maybe you have more. But the thing about it, each of those sellers are going to have a different motivation or different things that makes them tick or make them progress. Why? For instance, when I was first married, right, you know, my big motivation was getting, you know, paying off our debt, like paying off cars and, you know, pay for our wedding and stuff like that. So that was my motivation, right? Those were the things that were pushing me. If my manager came and without having that alignment and trying to tell me to do this to fulfill the company's objectives, I have nothing in it. And Jeffrey, go back to Jeffrey, one of the things that he said is that people love to buy, but they hate to be sold, right? So if you think about it, the same thing with your sellers each have a motive, they each have a desire, but if you're pushing them to fulfill your desire, it's not going to happen. You need to make sure to tap into their desire. What is it that guides them? What is it that pushes them? What's their motivation? What gives them that drive in a Sunday night to get up and say, I'm ready to go to work on Monday morning? Is it to travel the world? Is it to, you know, buy the new car? Is it to pay the down payment on the house. Everyone has that. What is it for them? You need to tap into that. That's the very first thing you need to do as a coach.
Yeah, you know, it seems like that's one of those things you're like, you know what, that might be somewhat obvious, but it, a lot of the systems we have, I don't think they don't personalize, right? I mean, no. You could potentially, if you were a good coach, right, if in your one-on-one sessions, if you were good, you could probably get there. But when it comes to things like, you know, our incentive plan or our compensation plans, they're all more generic. Why do you feel like people miss that step? Is it because they just don't take the time to get to know their people? That's probably, I mean, they just kind of assume, hey, we'll send them to a generic onboarding. We'll do a generic kind of one-on-one every once in a while, and we leave it at that? Or how come I don't get to, hey, my goal is to buy a boat. My goal is to pay for the 5 kids I have. My goal is, you know, how come that doesn't come out enough?
It's too hard.
Yeah.
It's too hard. You know, people love, as a human nature, I don't care who you are. We are going to find the easiest way to do something. And especially as a sales leader, I understand the things that they have. They have to carry numbers. They have to do all these things. They have to put out fires. They have the executive meetings that they have to go to. They have to manage these reps. They have to do so much. And it's just difficult to say, well, now I'm going to need to sit down with the 10 people or 15 people I manage and to figure out a way to help them individually. No, I'm going to try to streamline this as much as possible and cookie cutter it. And if, God forbid, if they go, you know, then so be it. I can fill that position, but I need to find top people coming in. And that pressure create a culture or atmosphere where it's not necessarily catering towards the individual. It's more catering towards the top and towards the numbers. But I've seen it totally different when you find organizations, and I've been a part of them, when organizations have focused on us individually, the sellers always perform. The end just – in that situation – the ends is totally justified the means. So give them that one-on-one approach. And you don't have to do it every week. I mean, once a month, you sit down with these folks. But when you can sit down and understand what drives them and what motivates them, what individual challenges they have uniquely and focus target on that, you're going to see a better increase in your performance. And the other thing, too, sometimes, Gabe, you find that these companies take the top managers, right? Especially small, mid-sized companies, they take the top seller and then promote her or him into a management position. And now you need to not only do that, they need to sell as well. And those are some dangerous situations where you have a selling manager who is one of the top performers. So they're carrying the team and now they don't have time to take care of anybody else. And you see a big disconnect. And that's where you usually see lack of communication and a breakdown in performance.
Got it. I mean, I'd love to continue down that path for a minute. I mean, you've seen this, you've experienced. So what are some of the other mistakes managers make when coaching, or what that we make, I guess, in general, when we coach? Anything else come to mind?
Yes. Coaching is not telling. Coaching is mainly, it's listening, right? I feel that coaching is, a lot of it has to deal with like a good sales situation. Like if you're building value with a customer, there's a study done, and I had Chris Orlov on a podcast, and he was talking about the AI study that they had. They'd use AI in over 25,000 different calls. They
phone calls, yeah. We know Chris is, he's an old InsideSales.com guy. I talked to him just the other day. Good guy. So his study, you kind of, talked a little bit about his research.
Yeah, because it said that, you know, the majority, I think it was like, it's something that we all know, but we just don't validate as sellers. But it's like, right, if you talk like 60, if the customer talks 60.
The talk listen ratio, right? There was something about that.
It has to be. And in a coaching scenario, I find that managers, we want to find the least resistant. We want to find the easy way out. So if you're having trouble with converting a lead into an opportunity, right? Most managers just want to get that meeting done quickly. So they're going to tell you what you should do, as opposed to ask the appropriate questions that let you cognitively, your gears in your mind work to say, oh, maybe I should do this to get that done. So coaching requires you to ask questions that are going to prompt the buyer or even the sales rep in this scenario to come to conclusion themselves, as opposed to you giving them the cookie cutter answer. And that sometimes lead to, you know, short-term fixes, but not long-term results.
That's tough, man. You're talking to, as a salesperson, you know, I had one of my mentors say once, right, you have two ears and one mouth, and that's the way you're supposed to use it. But we as salespeople like to talk, and I assume as managers, let people learn themselves rather than tell them the way it's supposed to be. That's not easy. What and any other mistakes, any other kind of typical things people do to ruin those coaching sessions?
One of the things that you got to have is that it's like a good map or a good gauge. You must do an assessment, because sometimes we jump into it. We're like, okay, Gabe is having a hard time closing, right? So therefore I'm going to focus all my meetings on closing. Well, that's cool. That may be one aspect of the challenge that Gabe has, but does a company have some kind of simple assessment that you have that you can give? And a couple weeks ago, I created a little PDF it's like five steps for five-step sales coaching guide. And in there, I put like a basic assessment, like, you know, just like some questions, and you could do your own. There's not like a rhyme or reason, but I think every manager need to do that at first. Find out where the seller is standing. Like, you know, what's the sales experience, or are they making a 50% of quota or less, and how well do they work with others in management? What kind of problem do they have? Problem finding skills. How would you rate the problem finding skills? When you can do some of these things and you find out find out what are the basics to be successful in your company. And then ask the seller those questions and see where she or he stands, how far they are, if they feel comfortable. And then you could use this gauge throughout your coaching. So like in 2 months, I might sit down and ask, now, Gabe, how do you feel? What's your, you know, do this assessment, answer these questions truthfully on a scale of 1 to 10, where do you feel you're at? And then we can match it based on the data, right? Because now we can see 3 months later, Gabe is closing a little bit more deals and he feels a little bit more comfortable talking about money. So that probably was one of the biggest issues that he had at the time. You know what I mean?
Yeah. Well, you know, that takes sometimes a little bit of time. Yeah. I remember my mom, I think it was my mom or my brother really got into this in, maybe it was the 90s, but it was this book called Body for Life. And it was like, PX, what was that thing called?
P90X.
P90X. They always come around, right? Every 5 or 10 years. But there was this one called Body for Life. But the reason the guy, God, I'm forgetting his name, but man, the reason he made it famous was he really pushed that idea of take the picture before, you know, when you're fat and slabby and ugly. and then, you know, take the picture after. I think P90X did the same thing, right? 90 mm-hmm. day, take the picture. And that before and after, I mean, if you don't have that, again, it takes a little bit of time to take out the camera, you know, take your clothes off, whatever, and snap the pic, but it's totally worth it, right? You feel that transformation, you see it, and I assume in coaching sessions, you want to feel that as well. I mean, you want, as a rep, to be able to see something tangible that says, hey, this is where I was, this is where I am now, look at the transformational process. If you don't do that, you probably miss out on a lot of the just the kind of the perception of the training. I'm surprised we don't really get that. And like you said, it's probably not that difficult. Probably, you know, you got a PDF, maybe you write down some key core items and you can kind of see that progression. So love that. Yeah. So those are some of the mistakes. Let's get into it. I want to get into the how to coach and a little bit around the formatting. Sure. And maybe even the measurement if we have a little more time. But give us a couple tips on how to do it then in an effective way.
Great question on that. So now we have to understand our why. We understand where we're going. So we understand that Gabe has some challenges. Right now, I probably rank some. And this is the other thing too. When you ask, as opposed to you giving a ranking, have the seller rank themselves, they're going to be more harsh on themselves than you are. So you're going to say, you might say, well, now I'm a 40% seller or whatever, you know, whatever that gauge do you create internally. Maybe your company has something. But now we know that they're where he or she stands. Now we know where we can go. So our goal is, let's set a goal to get to in 2 months. Can we get to 60%, close 60% quota? Great. So then we just work backwards and ask those questions. You have to make sure that meeting starts off with like a, you know, we understand a clear objective. We understand what the goal of this session is. Maybe there's something in particular that Gabe feels that he or she, you know, needs help on. You're going to set that as the goal and you're going to discuss that. Set the specific time period. You need to have this meeting every month. It's going to be every month. You set it every month. Yeah. For new sellers, this will be a recommendation. Maybe higher frequency with new sellers and then lower with expert sellers or sellers, experienced sellers. So Gabe, you've been selling for a while. I might say, you know, let's just meet once a month. But if I know that someone is new, they're trying to get cracking, I'm going to say, let's meet, every 2 weeks. And then let's get you going. Or if it's weekly, but I want to get you on a good path and I wean you off that so you can start doing more of your own thing. But the start of the session, I really like to do that to make sure we have a clear objectives. I would ask you what's based on our overall theme that, you know, we need to help you with close rate. What particular do you feel is, based on the assessment, what do you feel is the biggest issue you're having right now? I say, well, Donald, I'm just really having a tough time with our, with asking some questions. I don't know how to, you know, turn it from the presentation now to closing. Okay, great. Yeah. And I might do some question asking around that. And you can come with questions, come with some simple questions that you're going to ask, because these meaningful questions, these open-ended questions, are going to help the individual to be able to assess themselves. Right. And then you want to give them idea. Now, I'm not saying that you don't give some training in that too, you know, but the dominant side of this needs to be on asking appropriate questions to help them think and educate, that you help educate them. Just like the challenge a sale model, they ask those questions to help the buyer to really think, and then you can educate and teach in that process. And I might tell you, give some ideas as well. And then at the end of that meeting, I want to make sure we have clear objectives. I'm saying, Gabe, based on our session today, what's one major takeaway that you got from it? What's one thing you're going to take and implement to help you with asking these questions? Well, I'm going to do this. Great. How are you going to measure that?
Yeah,
well, I'm going to do it every time. You know what I mean?
No, yeah. I mean, it's structure. I mean, sounds like you've got to just have something. I think a lot of these managers show up and throw up, right? They get in that room and it's, hey, dude, or, you know, dudette, or, you know, you know, let's just chat. But it sounds like, okay, here's our goal. Let's meet often. You know, you meet often. And then it's something like, I like the idea of kind of letting them choose their path and then you following it up. But that's probably what I feel like I see, is that people come in just unprepared. And it sounds like you've got a little bit of a structure. Yes. You would say, let's make those coaching sessions more effective. So to kind of put the cherry on top, how do you measure this process? How do I say, okay, this is effective? Is it just go back to that assessment, or am I watching the numbers of these people more intensely? Or how do I know if I'm measuring these things the right way?
I think there's a combination of both. If you do it in person coaching session, here's a couple things that I would do. I would record it. So get the permission and just get your phone out and record that sucker and drop it in like a Dropbox file that you guys can go back to. You'll see a difference there. Two, you want to make sure that that's, well, first of all, is the assessment. The second is recording. So the assessment, you can look at the assessment. So if we focus and realize, you know, on a scale of you were making 30%, 40% of your quota, you know, last year. And then based on our coaching, let's look at it, do an assessment again. And, you know, you feel that now your ranking is a lot better. And then your numbers prove it too. Now you're making 50% quota. This is great. You did an increase, or 60%. You're doing a greater, you know, increase. So now we know based on that that you're progressing. And the cool thing about it too, I incorporate some group aspect, especially if you're in an organization. Steal Toastmasters pattern. You know, Toastmasters have that group meeting and they have structure where it allows, you know, sellers to help peer-to-peer type of education, which is a perfect part. If you're doing your sales meeting, don't just say, go around and to everyone, tell me your number, or if you hit your number this week, do some education that's going to help the team as a whole, and you'll see morale increase. But the measurements I would first look at is, one, make sure you can look at that assessment and use that as your guide. If we're focusing on closing, then I want to look at in 6 months to see, you know, your closing rate should be back, should be up to par, up to average or higher, or whatever the goal we set at the beginning. Two, I wanted to make sure we can look at the recordings and you'll see a bigger increase in the confidence of that individual compared to 6 months later. And then three, you want to make sure also look at the numbers. Are the numbers there? You know, are you hitting that?
Are you actually hitting the metrics that you've kind of set the goal to be?
Put that on them. You know, I mean, you don't want to say, well, the company said you have to hit 80% quota. Where do you think you should be, Gabe? And Gabe's going to be like, I should be at a 90%. I'm like, that's fine with me. I'm not going to argue against that. Well, what can we do to get to 90%? I just feel I have a hard time closing. I have a lot of demos, but I'm not getting close. Okay. Why is that? And just break it down and see. And then let's work on that. How can we get up to that 90 and follow through? Coach just really just need to be that person.
The coach.
I have a client right now. I'll tell you this, Gabe. She is stellar. Girl can sell. Girl's been selling for a minute, right? She knows a thing or two about sales, right? So she came to me. I'm going to call her Amber. Amber came to me and she was like, you know, I need some coaching, Donald. And I was like, okay, I can jump on an initial call, did an assessment. And I'm like, why does she need me for? She knows what she's doing already. But it turns out she wasn't hitting her quota. She wasn't hitting the goal. And all she needed was that guide in her corner to ask those questions and to challenge her, right? Mm. And I challenged her on some things and help her put some processes in place. And then she became number four in her company, number four in the whole company. And it wasn't like anything. She already knew how to sell. It was just the fact that coaching just allowed her to get that guide and to have that process that she can follow and to have the accountability. And that's where I see a lot of managers can do.
Yeah, you know, I think sometimes as coaches, we want to take too much on, right? We want to probably come in and take ownership or, and it just doesn't work that way. Again, thinking of like sports, right? I mean, you can't take the jump in the batter's box, right? You can't jump on the basketball court. I mean, you do have to be the person who just guides and facilitates, and they got to step up. They got to own it. They got to take responsibility. They need to report to you their numbers, right? They need to report to you where they're weak, right? They're the ones who know. You're then the one who has to shape. But I think that's a little bit of a different switch. Like you said, people want to come in and tell rather than come in and be like, hey, I'm the facilitator. I'm just your guide. I'm not you. I'm not going to actually step on into the batter box and take a swing. So, well, Donald, I appreciate it, man. A lot to think about, thinking about coaching, how to do it right, what you can and can't be doing, process, assessment, structure. I think you've really laid out a pretty decent plan to think through it for a lot of our managers and coaches. So really appreciate you jumping on, man. As we wrap up, if someone wants to get a hold of you or kind of experience the sales evangelist, where should they go or what can they do?
You know, the best thing they can do, actually, I'll give them this PDF if they would like. They can go to thesalesevangelist.com/Gabe. So thesalesevangelist.com/GABE, and I'll set up a little page so they can download that PDF and just test it out themselves and just see if it can be a little guide for them and help them in their sales coaching processes. So
awesome, man. Make sure salesevangelist slash Gabe. We'll make sure we get that in the show notes. We'll make sure we get that in the show notes. We'll go from there. So Donald, again, appreciate it, my man, for the audience. Thanks so much. And as always, let's get at it.